Welcome to Practice Care with Carl White, the podcast where we help practice owners in healthcare know just enough about the business side to make good business decisions and keep their practices independent. Now our host, Carl.
Patient experience can be the reason why you get more patients into your practice and keep them. And my guest today is going to give us a lot of great insights on what that means and how to get started on it. I'm Carl White, principal at Mark Advisory Group, which is a healthcare marketing agency, and I'm also the host of Practice Care. The mission for both is the same, and that's to help private practice owners stay private. Not only is that what they really want, but I really believe that care is better when it's just you and your provider, and nobody else is secretly whispering in the provider's ear what their own agenda is, like a hospital or a health system or other owners in faraway lands. It's just better when it's your doctor being able to call the clinical shots without having to worry about what anybody else says. And today, my guest is Barbara Kazam. As the founder of Barbara Kazam Speaking and Consulting, Barbara is an internationally recognized speaker and trainer, having delivered over 1,900 presentations to 75,000 people in 12 countries on customer service, patient experience, leadership, and communication. Barbara is known for her high energy, high impact delivery, outrageous wit, and ability to tackle real issues posed by her audience. In 2019, Barbara was chosen as the top customer service consultant of the year by the International Association of Top Professionals. Also in 2019, she was awarded the CSP, which is the Certified Speaking Professional, from the National Speakers Association. Barbara is one of only three women in the world to have achieved both this designation as well as the Toastmaster accredited speaker designation. In 2021, Barbara achieved the Certified Patient Experience Professional designation from the Patient Experience Institute. And in her spare time, when she's not racking up these really cool sounding and amazing designations, you can find her on the beaches of Southern California playing the best sport ever invented, she will contend, which is beach volleyball. And Barbara, thank you for coming on to Practice Care.
Thank you, Carl. I'm super excited to be here today. Yeah.
It's great to have you here. It's a great topic. I think on the one hand, it's a topic that is on a lot of private practice owners' minds, both positive and negative, and maybe it's a complete miss for others. So I'm hoping we can start to beyond scratching the surface a bit to talk a bit about this. But first, let's just get a little bit more color on what you do and just, you know, give us a flavor of, tell us about the customer service kind of patient experience work you do.
Well, Carl, it's quite fun what I do. It's quite expansive. So usually what happens is someone discovers me because of a speaking engagement or a training that I do. But then they quickly realize that a training alone doesn't fix patient experience problems. So then when I go in, I am a professional mystery patient.
Ah.
I've taken my clothes off for a lot of people. Anyway, and
I didn't realize how far beyond the waiting room you would go. Okay.
I do mystery calls. So what I do for practices is I basically get in the patient's shoes and I view their practice at every touch point from start to finish. So I pretend like I'm a patient. I will Google them, for example. Like the first thing I do is, oh, I'm looking for a doctor in, put in the name of the city, right? Mm-hmm. And then I search for my client. I see where they come up with those results. Then mm-hmm. I look at their social media comments, their Google reviews, Yelp, Health Grades, WebMD. And I see the reviews. And, they haven't had a review in 7 years. Mm-hmm. Or, yes, they have reviews, but they're not responding to the negative ones. So I just kind of analyze that. I then go to the website. And I see, oh my gosh, I can't find the phone number. I want to call, but there's no. So I just look at every touch point from start to finish through the visit. Mm-hmm. And then I can make lots and lots of recommendations. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's a lot of overlap with what we do. We spend a lot of time with, you know, making the practice look instantly, you know, good and easy to navigate and the kind of place you'd want to stop and spend more time looking at and getting to know so that you will call them. Just this week, I've got a client where they had their contact page kind of buried in it. And I've never seen it before. It was buried. And I said, you know, you have to move it. Just get it out to where people, and as I'm saying this, I've come to the conclusion that I shouldn't be surprised anymore, you know, because you see all sorts of things where you go, why would anybody allow X to be the way it is? And right. And yet here they are. And so now the contact page is much easier to find. And it wouldn't surprise me if they get some more contacts just because nobody has any attention span anymore.
That's, you know, right.
And they're not going to poke around to find, right, if they can't find it instantly. Interesting, right. Interesting. So a lot of doctors out there, and I've met them, believe that great clinical care, it's all that's really needed in patient experience, right? If their problem gets fixed or they're on a good clinical path to recovery, however that's couched, that's great patient experience. What else would a patient really want? What's your reaction to that kind of mindset?
Well, it makes sense from a provider perspective that quality, like, so there's a survey question that's asked to patients, right? How would you rate the quality of the healthcare? What do you think of, what does quality mean to you?
Yeah.
And if you ask a doctor, they will say that I heal them. They come in, they're sick, they leave, they're healthy. That is quality.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask a patient, what is a quality doctor visit? They will say things like, I was treated with respect. They listened to what I had to say. They were compassionate, which is not a quality according to the provider, right?
Yeah.
It's people skills.
Yeah.
When I walked in, I was acknowledged.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, those score way high. In fact, they did a study. They rated all these characteristics, and the medical decisions and the knowledge of the doctor came up as 7 on that list. Not 1, not 2, not 3, like,
yeah,
7,
yeah,
was my doctor was knowledgeable and good with,
yeah,
the skills. All the other things were listening, respect, kindness, So we're just not in sync on how we're trying to deal with our patients. Yes, we need to be good with quality, yes.
Yes.
But these other things are not what patients are looking for.
And do you think that's because, is there, I guess, an assumption, maybe a subconscious assumption, from a patient that's saying, well, you're Dr. X, you're supposed to be good at what you do.
That's
correct. Supposed to be. And so if I think everybody is supposed to be good at what they do, then it's a tie. I can't choose,
right,
based on that. So what else am I going to look at to choose Dr. X and stay with Dr. X's practice? If
that's
you're supposed,
correct,
to give me good clinical care, then, you know, who's the nicest to me? Who's the most respectful?
Right.
Who's the best listener?
So, yeah? I have an example of this. So,
okay,
let's say you're flying somewhere from, you know, San Diego to Dallas, let's say, right? You are boarding the plane. You're boarding the plane. Do you, when you board the plane, stop, turn left, go into the cockpit, ask to see the pilot's license, the maintenance records on the aircraft, ask how many times have you flown from San Diego to Dallas? How many times? Because, you know, we assume, it's just what you said.
Yeah.
We assume
you're supposed to do
that
well.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And they have the knowledge and they're updated. We assume that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting. I, a personal recent doctor experience, I was switched doctors and, you know, he started to ask me, so what do you want to do about X? And I looked at him and I said, I don't know. You're the, like, I don't know. I mean, and what I finally said to him, I said, I want you to help me make a good decision. You know, I can't make it for you. And I guess on the other hand, I want you to just tell me what to do. And he said, yeah,
right,
you know, the health system that we're in, they really want us to get the patients involved. And so I guess he interpreted that or was further coached, I don't know, to say, you decide, patient. I'm like, why on earth would that ever be,
right,
a good, I mean, be a good,
no,
but I think they're fishing around. You know, for,
right,
what's the right thing to do here? And I said,
right,
no, give me a couple of choices. And what would you do,
right,
if you were me? And that's what I find,
yeah,
stymies the doctor. I'm like, if I were your kid that you, and my wife adds in, that you liked, like if it's a kid you,
right,
don't like it. If I were your brother that you liked, what would,
yeah,
you tell me to do? You get good advice.
Right. Right. I agree.
So, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So earlier you said, you know, usually you find new clients after, you know, after a presentation or a talk that you've given. So now let's imagine a prospective client calls you up. What are some of the things that they're suspecting in their own practice that's off? And, you know, let's say you take them on, what are some of the more common things you find? And the reason I wanted to ask you this is because listeners out there, these are what Barbara sees with all the expertise she's got. You can have a good, honest look at your own practice and go, oof, maybe we have something to look at. So I'm curious, right. You know.
So some of the common sticky points are that patients go away.
They don't complain,
yet they're not staying. Mm. They have like one appointment, but then they like disappear. That's like one thing. Mm-hmm. And then another is really with staffing nowadays. I heard this complaint a lot recently, especially like in the last 4 or 5 months with we're hiring new people like for the front desk. And they're, let's say, a younger age group, mm-hmm. 20 to 28, let's say. I can't motivate them. You know, the only thing that motivates them is money and blah, blah, blah. But there's something else going on here. So those are like really the two that we can't hire and keep them and get them motivated. And then the patients aren't staying.
Okay. And when you go into some of those, do you find this? Because sometimes people say my problem is caused by X, Y, and Z. And then you go in, I've seen this on the marketing side occasionally too. And I go, actually, yeah, but it's also A, B, and C.
And yes. So yeah. A lot of people will say this, oh, you know what? My front desk staff are horrible. They're rude and, you know, they don't make eye contact. So they blame everything on the front desk staff. Mm-hmm. But really the leader, the owner of the practice, the head lead physician doesn't say hello to the front desk when they walk in. They're not recognizing them. They don't even know their names. So everything starts at the top.
Yeah.
And if the leaders, if what I have found mm-hmm. in my successful practices, when the leaders and the office managers mm-hmm. and the doctors treat employees well, and they recognize them when they do things right, it's not about money, the employees will respond positively.
Yeah.
So they like to blame other people, but they don't look at themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're clinicians, a lot of them.
I know.
You know, like they're doing a good job with the patients.
Yeah.
And they... especially if they grow, they forget about the team.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a guest on, we haven't put the episode up yet, but her thing is, yes, patients of course are number one, but also number one is the employees. And I find that mm-hmm. the better care I take of my employees, and not just with money, but of care, of culture, of leadership, of mm-hmm. listening, if they're happy, then patient satisfaction is going to get a bump. It just will. Patient loyalty will get a bump. Everything is better when the people who care for patients are happy and satisfied in their jobs.
Right.
It just makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And another thing too, just along that same line, similarly, mm-hmm. is a lot of practice owners don't have, this is going to sound so lame, but like a mission or a vision. Mm-hmm. Of the practice, mm-hmm. and especially when you start to grow. Well, if you don't know your vision, what is your mission? How do you want people to be treated? Then how are your staff going to know this? You know, starts at the top. Like with my practices, what they do, they have a main mission statement, and then each department creates their own mission statement or mm-hmm. mantra
right.
that's in line with the big picture.
Right.
So one example is one of... The front desk mantra is that how you would treat your mom?
Oh, I like that.
Or if you don't like your mom.
Right, your mom that you like.
You treat yeah. your loved one,
right?
But it's kind of cool, right? It's like, how would you treat a loved one? Well, I would smile at them and I'd probably listen if they're complaining. And
yeah.
It just changes your whole mindset and behavior.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me think of, I hope they still do this, but I read a story once that at Amazon, even after they got to be the behemoth that they are, at least when Jeff Bezos was still running it, that at every meeting or many meetings, there would consciously be an empty chair at the table. And that was to represent the customer,
yeah,
whoever their customer is, to not forget. Yep. It's all, you know, if the customer's not spending money with us, none of this, the rest of this really matters.
Right.
So very interesting. If you did, maybe you answered part of it, but I want to ask it anyway. If you were to compare, you look at the practices that you work with or that you know, who embrace patient experience, and you had to compare them to practices that you think of who do not, what would be the differences between them two? What helps, what makes
well,
them
stand
apart
from each
other?
Like what we just said. So the leadership team is on top of things. So, mm-hmm. and with patient experience, AKA customer service, it's a constant communication. So these people, they have daily huddles or at least weekly meetings where they're talking about, okay, remember, we're wearing name badges. We're using patients' names. So it's a constant communication. They're constantly rewarding their employees. You know, it's not just, oh, you didn't use the patient's name. It's, hey, you're wearing your name badge. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So they have a system for it. So they've got the customer service protocols, which I help them create. So they've got the protocols they can hold them accountable to, reward them when they do great, use it as an accountability tool if they don't, but it's a constant communication. It's not, I'm going to send you to training and now we're done. Now you can understand patient experience. That's one and done. That's not long-term success.
Yeah, that's a kickoff.
So it's got to be the consistency over time.
Right. Boy, talk about consistency with marketing a lot here. It makes a lot of sense when you say it. It's building a habit. Building habits take time. Getting them good takes longer. It takes repetition. Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you were saying, when you were saying leadership before, and then you were talking about this time, what came into my mind, I thought of two examples. So one is, I hear in the dental world, the term production used. You know, how's the production of the chairs? How many patients are kind of coming through? And then another example is, and it's when there's partners, when there's doctor partners who own, the compensation will be different. There's like an individual production contribution as well, and it could be very uneven. And you know, those things are in my mind saying those mindsets strike me as like a roadblock to what we're talking about now. Because if you're thinking of producing and you're thinking of, individual contributor, it's not really leadership, right? I mean, that's kind of the opposite of it, but they're out there and there's a lot of consulting. Like there's dental, not to pick on that, but there's practice management consultants out there. Lots of them that talk about that. And I'm wondering like, what do you think about, I mean, am I onto something there? Like when they talk about, you know, increase your production, but you know, you're flying in the face of leadership, which you also need.
Right.
Know,
well, so if someone told me I'm an employee, Barbara, you need to increase your production, which would be what people in seats or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I would treat them like a freaking number. Like Mike, I want to get in and out. Like, I don't care about this person. It's a body, right?
Yeah.
That's what, to me, the attitude would be like.
Yeah.
It's not, we're going to treat each patient like a human being with compassion. No, it's like, get them in and out. Quick. Well, how's patient satisfaction or experience with that?
Yeah.
They're like, I feel like I was processed. I'm sure you felt like that.
Yeah.
Going to any company, right? Oh my God, I'm just a number. Take a number, 72. Okay, boom.
Yeah.
I don't think that helps at all. I mean, it's good to have goals, right?
Yes.
But if that's all we focus on, same thing like oh my God, drives me crazy. Call center people, or they count how long they're on the call. Okay, you can't be on the call any longer than, well, that's going to force someone to rush. It's going to make the patient feel rushed, and this doesn't do anybody any good. So are these numbers helping or are they hurting? I don't know. Something to think about.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it seems like the mindset would be at least a little bit in conflict with what we're talking about here. And, you know, if your attention hasn't been caught yet by the idea that better customer satisfaction leads to, you know, a healthier practice, think of it this way. One of the most expensive things you have to do as any business owner, including as a practice, is go get new clients, go get new patients. And one of the least expensive things to do is to hold on to those that you currently have, you know, and the longer they stay with you, the more profit you generate because you don't have to spend very much to keep them anymore. Well, customer satisfaction, patient satisfaction, that's like the number one way to make sure that you're retaining the highest percentage of patients that you can, right? I mean,
right.
Yeah. So,
but I have a story for you. While you were talking, I thought about this. One of my clients is a medical doctor. There's two doctors that work there, medical doctors. And these patients love these doctors, love them. And the appointments are 15 minutes. That's it. They're only 15 minutes long. You would think, that's not very long, you know, but no, the doctors walk in, they know exactly why they're, hi, Mrs. Johnson, good to see you again. How are those hemorrhoids? You know, whatever. so Like super friendly. They make it very clear. This visit is for one item on your list. Yeah. It's very clear. This is what we're going to cover. Oh, you have another issue? Okay, let's make another appointment. These patients love these doctors, yet they're still seeing a bunch of them in a day. Mm-hmm. So you can be productive, but not appear to be rushed. You know, it's how you communicate. Do you make them feel special? Do you listen? You can do it in a short amount of time.
Right.
You know, and still be kind, still be productive.
It's just kind of framing expectations, right? If you're in there one issue, you can nail that in 15 minutes comfortably. Exactly.
Right.
Nice. Nice. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Barbara, we could talk hours on this.
I know.
And I love it because it's such a differentiator. It can be, it's just like I said before, you know, holding on to patients, generating more loyalty. Man, we could go in a lot of different directions. But in the interest of kind of bringing this to the finish line, a couple of questions I ask a lot of guests. The first one is there anything you think I should have asked you that I didn't?
Oh my gosh. So many things. Maybe you were going to ask this next, but like if I was a practice owner, maybe like where to start regarding the patient experience.
Okay.
Because like, there's so many touch points.
Yeah.
Like where to start. So the first thing I would recommend is something easy would be like the in-person interaction. Mm-hmm. Like for example, when the patient walks in, the human contact can overcome a lot of the other stuff. You know, that first human contact, how they're greeted when that patient walks in. Mm-hmm. So my question is, when the patient walks in, how is that first greeting? Does someone recognize them immediately? Or do they have to stand there and wait to sign a piece of paper? Mm-hmm. Also, I would look at the environment. Like I went to one doctor's office and I walked in and they had glass door, they were mirrored doors. So I couldn't see in. And on the mirrored doors were all these signs, do not knock, do not knock, put on your mat, like all these. And I was like, so I can't knock, but no one's acknowledging me. I stood there for 5 minutes.
Oh, that's bad.
Like, why? So like, look at that. Yeah. Like when they walk in, are there so many signs that I can't even see the people? Or like just that little thing alone, that initial greeting can make or break that first impression.
The first impression, so that's like just thinking that.
In the phone, of course, I could go off on the phone, how your people answer the phone, for goodness sakes. But that first, that initial in-person greeting, if you could fix that, you can change a lot of perceptions.
Yeah, really interesting. So, and that was the next question. Are there one or two, you know, simple, tangible places somebody could start to dig in on this issue and figure out, do we have a problem? How big it? Do we need to call Barbara? You know, what do we need to do?
Right.
That's one.
That's one. And then, you know what else I would do? I would look to see if you're getting consistent complaints about things. Mm-hmm. Is it wait times? It takes me too long to get an appointment, or I'm on hold too long. I'm sitting in the reception. Like, what are the common complaints? And if you're not getting complaints, that's a bad thing. You need to be getting feedback on a regular basis. So are you getting feedback?
Yeah.
Because if you're not getting feedback, you don't know. I mean, feedback means that they're letting you know, hey, I don't like waiting. That's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
You can talk about it. You can come to a conclusion, but get feedback, or if you're getting feedback, look at it and see what areas you need to start addressing first.
Yeah. We work with a lot of clients on that. For us, it's just the form of trying to get reviews online. And when you get enough of them, you can mine them and look at comments. Are there any patterns in there? You know, like there was one where there was, love the doctor, but you know, the insurance, I forget how they said, but the insurance side of life was such a headache. And I'd be like, look, three people have said this and you might want to have a look at that process to try to make it easier, because people are complaining about it. Now the whole world can read it. And the lack of reviews, that's not good either.
That's
right. There's a lot of reasons why that's not good. And you know, this being one of them, no feedback is kind of bad feedback. People don't care enough. So,
So I read a statistic. It said that even if a patient gets a good referral, 78% go online for validation of that referral.
Yeah.
So if you don't have any updated reviews, or you have like 8 reviews from 2014, what am I thinking? Oh, Are they still practicing? Like, have they updated their skill? I'm thinking they're not even up to date.
And I'll take it further. Yeah. If your website looks even the slightest bit old, if it takes a little too long to load onto somebody's screen, there's no attention span anymore. If your social media properties look stale, all these things, and why? Yeah. Why should that matter? Go back to what Barbara was saying at the beginning. Clinical care was 7 on the list, you know, not 1, 2, or 3. People are presuming that you are already clinically good at what you do. So if there's 10 of you who do the same thing within the radius that the patient's willing to drive in, something else has to separate you in a competitive, you know, situation. And so these things matter. It's kind of sad. These things matter. And so you got to be on top of them. Nice.
That's right.
Nice. Barb, it's really cool. I love it. I love the whole topic. Like I said before, it could be such a differentiator, you know?
It can. And what's great about it, it doesn't cost a lot of money. You know, to be nice, to acknowledge patients, use their name, like these little things can be your distinguishing factor.
Yeah.
And not a lot of people do it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Is there somewhere like a practice owner could start on the leadership part? Like I was thinking as you were saying that, you know what, tomorrow, you know, make sure you say hi to everybody in the office or something. I you know, like just start to chip away. Is there somewhere?
You know what I do have? Which I don't know if you have interest in this, but I have this checklist. It's called Customer Service Checklist for Leaders.
Okay.
And basically it's one sheet of paper. It's got 38 things and it just asks questions like, do you have a mission statement? Have you talked to it with your team? Do they have buy-in? Do you have customer service protocols? So all the stuff we talked about is in a checklist form.
Okay.
So at least it could help them narrow it down and see where they need to start.
Yeah. Let's talk about that afterwards. If you're willing to, okay. I could put it in the show notes as a link. Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Great. Perfect. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, Barbara, thank you again for taking some time out of your busy beach volleyball life to come and share some wisdom with us.
my pleasure.
On practice care. And we'll get all of your contact information in the show notes so that anybody who wants to get a hold of you can do so. And just a couple of points before we wrap up this episode. First, if you've had an experience on the business side of your practice that you think other practice owners would benefit from, or if you're somebody like Barbara or I who services practice owners and want to bring some of your expertise to bear, we want you to come on Practice Care as soon as possible so that you can share your knowledge with the world. In the show notes, there's a link with instructions. It's very quick and easy. Just tell us what's on your mind. Please do it right away so that we can get you scheduled as soon as possible. And finally, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Practice Care on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks very much, and until next time.
Thank you for listening to Practice Care with Carl White. Make sure to subscribe and follow so you don't miss another episode. You can find our guest contact information in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode.